Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. And for today, we are talking, one of those things that's a bit sensitive. We're talking about loans, credit, some of the lifelines that keep some families, some businesses going, and, especially on the consumer side. And we're going to be talking to a company that says that they have a healthy alternative to credit, and that is PayJustNow. We're joined on the line by Craig Newborn, who is the CEO, together with Mark McCleary, who is the Chief Data and Analytics Officer. So, gentlemen, greetings to both of you. I think I'll start with Craig, just as the CEO, just to give us some insight into the company itself and some of the things that you guys are doing.
Good morning. Yeah, thank you for the time and the opportunity. We really do appreciate it. So PayJustNow is what they term a buy now, pay later value proposition that's been launched here in South Africa. It's a global concept that is taking the world by storm, and it allows, as you correctly stated, a healthy alternative to credit. And we've launched the product here in South Africa. It's been running for a year with consumers, and it's been a very powerful experience in terms of our engagement and what we've been able to achieve. The product that we've launched is a pay-in-three product, which effectively allows a consumer to purchase a lifestyle or luxury item and be able to split that into three interest-free and fee-free installments. So the price paid for cash for the product or the price paid over the term of the installments is exactly the same, as long as you pay on time.
So the mechanism itself, how much do I put down if I make a purchase? Are we talking just online sales, physical sales? How does that work?
So we initially launched with just online because it was a target market that we understood very well. And the product, the Pay in 3 product, splits the product into three equal payments for you. And you put a third down immediately to activate the product. And then you pay the balance of your remaining two installments on the first of the next month.
Okay, I think I understand that much. And then, Mark, you are, heading the data and analytics team. And I can imagine that over the year that you guys have been operational, you've been able to gather, a lot of information and insights into some of the buying patterns and behavior. How are you guys using data to develop the product?
Yeah, I think that's quite an important distinction, is that, everything we do online creates data. The challenge is taking those bits and bytes and putting them into something that is digestible. So it becomes sort of know-nothing state to a knowledge state, then to a sort of a wisdom state. Those are the three states of data that we interrogate. And basically it's tracking sort of trends of engagement and behavior, and overlaying that against the utility of what the consumer demand appears to be. It fashions where we focus in terms of what merchants we integrate with, what brands we integrate with, and ultimately informs what our next step is on this journey. As Craig said, we entered the market through the e-commerce channel, knowing that South Africa was effectively 5-10 years behind sort of first world economies in this space, not expecting e-commerce to have such a dramatic sort of rise. Obviously with COVID, nobody predicted that. And obviously that contributed to sort of adoption and engagement on our platform by both consumers and merchants alike. And so, it's just about the velocity of data and what we do with it to inform our intent.
Now, Mark, I do acknowledge, that because there's so much data being consumed, you guys are providing that alternative to traditional credit providers. So does that mean that you're also collecting perhaps different data points, or quote-unquote alternative data points that the traditional providers would otherwise either, you know, throw away or just not pay attention to?
Yeah, I think that that's also quite an important point to make, in that, you know, our transaction being online, first of all, we're informed with Logic that the average online transaction's under 1,500 Rand. And so automatically, you've got to look at what the value of the transaction is over what types of data that you need to get to determine what risk we can allocate to that type of transaction. So that was a logical first step. We definitely sort of base our decision models on a broader sort of range of data sets in terms of, you know, device type, location, engagement frequency, what social engagement sentiment and the like, and then overlaying that against known factors, you know, that we can attribute to a consumer, and that consumer's sort of profile in terms of what products they buy and what their intent is for aspirational sort of product searches.
Now, just coming back to Craig, I want to then, you know, talk specifically about the consumer, just to understand, because I'm sure, you know, just as a data set, it must have been quite interesting seeing some of the changes in the last year, pre and I guess quote unquote post COVID. So, what are some of the things that you guys have observed? How are consumers actually doing right now? Have they embraced, you know, online and digital channels for, you know, commerce as much as, you know, has been hyped, or is that sort of being overspoken about in actual everyday life?
So, a very interesting trend that we noted was that the product is being consumed by a very affluent consumer, as well as a very financially astute consumer, right? Because it allows them to basically purchase the product and have a term to pay the product. So they essentially purchase the product online, the product gets delivered, they've only paid a third, and they can see the product. If they're happy with the product, the subsequent payments go off automatically, right? So the first trend that we noticed that is that this particular product is being used by a very financially affluent, or the higher segments in financially affluent. That's the one segmentation that we've noticed, is there's significant uptake in this particular product, as well as what is deemed in the credit world as a thin file customer. So this is a customer who is very early on his credit journey. He typically does not have any other credit products. And he is purchasing a lifestyle or aspirational product, and is electing to use this product for the first time. In saying that, we've seen a significant increase in people turning online versus going into the stores. Prior to COVID, the trajectory was very consistent, and the growth was very consistent. And when COVID hit, it completely just shot completely off the charts. And from there, it's been consistent again in terms of growth. And online, I think what happened was people who possibly were afraid of transacting online went and tried to transact online, really worked out that this is, you know, the way to do things, and then have subsequently remained and repurchased. So the third trend that we're noticing is that someone who historically did not purchase online, in fact, is now purchasing repeatedly online. And that's across the entire merchant base that we're seeing. So a customer would use the product in one particular merchant and then come back and use it at one of the other 400 possible merchants that we have on board at this stage. In saying that, we are launching install, and that will allow a consumer to use this interest-free and fee-free product in-store, and allow them to walk out with the goods. So in-store is launching later this week with the first set of merchants. And we again expect a significant uptake in that particular segment.
Before we, you know, before we explore this, the in-store products, I just want to get Mark's take on, you know, some of this consumer behavior, specifically the online retail. So would you say that, you know, a product like this, like what you guys are doing with Pay Just Now, is sort of helping to change the behavior because it gives people that ability to put just a small, you know, I guess a fraction of the money down? Because if you've never done the online shopping before, you're not sure whether the payment is going to go through, if they're going to charge you too much, what the bank charges are going to be, is it going to arrive as advertised, is it going to arrive in the state that it says it is on the website, is it going to be broken, all of these uncertainties, and then it arrives, and then you see it, and then you're like, oh, okay, cool, you know, this thing is actually working, I can, you know, pay the rest of the amount now. So would you say, Mark, that this has been a bit of an incentive to help people to adopt online shopping a bit more?
Yeah, I think it goes without saying. It's actually quite difficult to, you know, sort of attribute an answer to that 100%. You know, obviously there's other factors that have contributed to this sort of burgeoning growth of the e-commerce space. But I think what our secret sauce is that we are unequivocally and wholly aligned with the consumer. And through the engagements, you know, the first time you might be sort of been a bit cautious when dipping your toes for the first time, but that, you know, that learned experience makes you feel comfortable and come back. I think to qualify this unequivocal, wholly aligned with the consumer comment is that obviously no interest and no fees. The first question we get asked is, what's the catch? And beyond that, once we've dealt with that and put their mind at ease, they then realize that this online experience of, you know, being open to a whole new virtual mall, for want of a better sort of reference, is that they can get what they want, they can touch it, feel it, use it before they've fully paid for it, which is the other sort of element that contributed to this growth, in that I'm buying for the first time online something for 1,500 rand, you know, not knowing if it's going to reach me in the state that I expect, or at all for that matter. But for this experience, I'm only putting down 500 Rand. And if it doesn't go well, I'm going to throw my toys out the cot and demand refunds and not pay the balance, you know, because sight unseen, you know, untested, that's a logical sort of consumer sort of position on it. So I think, you know, the tenets of trust, you know, that doesn't come overnight, is what we are intentionally building with the consumer, so that after their first experience, they can then see the utility of it, the real utility of it, and that's beyond one transaction. The utility of it is to be able to use it meaningfully, you know, to sort of grow your lifestyle, you know, positively.
Craig, coming back to you now, because this is a business-focused platform, how does Pay Just Now actually make money with, you know, the zero interest rates and, you know, allowing people to pay later, all of that? On what end, where is the upside for Pay Just Now?
Okay, so the upside for Pay Just Now in this particular model is that we charge the retailer a slightly higher fee than they would normally pay on their credit card and debit card transactions. So we become a gateway for accepting credit card and debit card transactions, and we then charge a higher fee to facilitate the transaction. Interestingly enough, our retailers have seen significant uptake in both the actual number of transactions that they are now accepting, and then secondly, the average basket size has also slightly increased. So what is happening is that people are buying the product, like the pair of shoes that, you know, cost 1,500 rand, and 1,500 rand was in 1 month too far stretch. But if you split that over the three installments, it's only 500 rand three ways. You know, they now add the very nice polish that goes with those shoes. You know, so there's definitely an upsell opportunity on the merchant side, and in doing so, the merchant sees significant benefit.
And just as a follow-up, now that you guys are going to be doing the in-store, how does that work? If I buy something, let's say, at one of the partner retail shops, if you could give us some examples of some of the partner retail shops, could I, you know, get to the counter and say, I'd like to use Pay Just Now? Do I ask the teller, for example, or does the teller say, oh, we've got this, you know, this payment option that's available? How do those mechanics work?
Okay, so we're deploying the in-store product, very similar to the SnapScan and Zapper QR code model product or Y Group code product, where there's a QR code that you can scan in store using your phone browser or the Pay Just Now app, which is also being launched later this week. And in that, it actually prompts you for the amount that you need to pay, very similar to the other vendors. And you then show the cashier that you have successfully paid using Pay Just Now. So it's very quick, it's very easy. If you're not a Pay Just Now customer, the sign-up process takes less than 1 minute, and it can be achieved completely in-store and on your phone.
Okay, cool. And Mark, as a company, what's your thinking just around in-store versus online? Because just by launching this product, it does indicate to some extent that you guys still believe that there is some space for bricks and mortar, that the mall is not as dead as some of the doomsayers would say.
Yeah, I think those doomsayers mostly hold stocks in sort of real estate REITs on the stock exchange, and that's what they're worried about. But you know, I think it actually, if I can flip that on its head, it's actually more about the consumer. You know, if you have bought online once, you are technically what's known as an omni-channel consumer. You're still going to be shopping in store. You're going to be shopping online. You're going to be engaging through apps. You're going to be using mobile wallets and, you know, EFTs and the like. So it's more about fashioning the product to be utility to the consumer. That consumer that loves that brand, that may have engaged with it online or bought it online, is going to find themselves in a mall environment at some stage. And if we are there with them and that utility makes sense, you know, they then are able to use it as a payment option. And so what it does is it actually just broadens the value proposition to that merchant as well. Because, you know, typically merchants that are in store, especially of late, you know, they're all trying to scramble to have big online presences as well. And so being able to close that circle and deliver that experience to the consumer, whether they are shopping online or in store, is the key. Because, you know, at the heart of anything that works for the consumer is that it's got to be sticky and predictable. You've got to know exactly what it does, and you've got to know how it works, and it's always got to be there and available for you to use when you want to use it. And I think, so it's just about marshalling our troops to be everywhere where the consumer would find utility with us. And again, you know, we're pretty early stages as a business. You know, our aspirations are going to follow the lifestyles of the consumer, in that our next iteration will follow them into the other sort of verticals where, you know, where their wallet is pulled out of their pocket and payments are made, you know. And again, it's to expressly solve for one problem, is the burden of debt and interest on South Africa's consumer in the real economy.
And we'll definitely be watching to see what happens with that in-store product, just to see, you know, what type of reception it does get. But for the product that you guys have had a lot of experience with, the online one, Mark, what type of reception, and when I say reception, what type of products or type of retailers or type of use cases have you guys seen to be popular when people are actually making use of your service? Is it clothes? Is it gadgets? Is it, you know, groceries? What are consumers actually using the product for?
So obviously, you know, the aspirational type lifestyle is always around fashion and apparel and, you know, sort of elements of things like that. But we've actually, with over 400 integrated online stores, we've got quite a broad array, ranging from sort of early childhood development, kids' toys, hobbies, tools, fashion, beauty, makeup, wigs, art, to your technology and your watches, and you know, types of the products that the consumers are buying. And I think the key here is that we also didn't chase the market leaders, the online market leaders. We went to South African brands with a story, because it's those South African brands that saw the utility of being able to reach and enable their consumers to shop with them in tough times, as a value proposition. So again, if you consider that we do charge a premium compared to a normal credit card transaction, you know, abandoned cart rates of like upwards of 70% exist online. And as a way to get that consumer back, Pages Now is a viable option. And in the in-store section, if you consider the lay-by market, you know, that the merchant actually has to comply with legislation, has to hold stock on their shelves for the duration of that lay-by. So the commercial stack up, irrespective of how much we charge that merchant, because it makes sense to be able to convert that transaction.
Craig, one of the things that I'm interested to then understand is the competitive landscape, because on this platform, we've also had, you know, just by description of the business model, we've had other businesses that sound like they're doing something similar, like Payflex, for example. And I just wanted to understand from, you know, your viewpoint, what does the competitive landscape actually look like for this type of product, and how much space do you actually see for maybe either additional players or your own growth?
So, okay, perfect. So, yes, the first thing I think we need to, there's a differentiation in the competitive landscape, which maybe sometimes the consumer is not very clear on. The first one is that there is interest-free products out there, and then there's interest-bearing products out there. So within the interest-free product space, as you've mentioned, Payflex is a competitor of ours. We absolutely welcome competition in this space. We believe competition keeps us all honest, and at the same time, it helps us educate the market in the value proposition that we are offering to the consumer. In that, you know, if you took an interest-bearing product and you purchased something for 1,000 rand, you would end up paying 1,260 rand, as an example, over the course of a year. And in fact, you're spending 260 rand not at the retailer. You've spent 1,000 rand at the retailer and 260 rand on an interest product. When in our particular case, we are going back, you are able to go back to the retailer after spending the 1,000 rand, because that's the only thing you've actually ever spent. So in terms of the competitive landscape, yes, Payflex. Our product is a South African, by South African, for South African product. It's completely directed at a South African consumer and who wants to support South African brands and wants to add to their lifestyle. In terms of the market, it is a huge market. The e-commerce landscape is growing annually upwards. Well, I mean, this year is an anomaly even further, but annually they are predicting that the e-commerce landscape is growing in excess of 20% a year. And then in-store, we believe that there is a significant, you know, opportunity, but also across multiple verticals. Mark alluded to that briefly, in that we are looking initially at the lifestyle and fashion vertical, but we are also making significant headway into other verticals that are part of the consumer's wallet. And to give you an interesting statistic, in Australia, almost 26% of all retail transactions, non-FMCG, so non-food goods, type transactions. 26% of transactions in the economy go through this type of product in Australia.
And then lastly, I will, you know, this one I'll direct to Mark, but Craig, very, very welcome to jump in. Some of the transaction volumes or, you know, I guess metrics, just to give us a sense of how people are using the product. Anything that you can share on that front?
Yeah, I think, again, metrics are a reflection of what happened yesterday. And so we're not precious about that. We obviously have sort of indicators that tell us where we're getting it right and where we're getting it wrong. But we're signing up 50 new sort of merchant partners sort of every 3 weeks, which, you know, as a pull method of a pull metric, it's an indicator that the businesses at the coalface dealing with these consumers are seeing the need and the demand, and it's becoming sort of quite topical. On the consumer side, we're getting just over 5,000 consumers signing up in sort of like a 28-day, new consumers signing up in a 28-day period. And so, you know, in terms of engagement and adoption, those numbers they reinforce why we stood out to do this in the first place, and it was to be a utility to the consumer while enabling sort of the commercial ambitions of our retail partners.
And then my last question, I'll give, Mark the first word and then Craig the last. What's your outlook for the sector as a whole, and where do you see Payjus now going?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's uncertain times. And so, you know, we don't purport to have a crystal ball either. So if any economists are listening in hoping to get a nugget from us that's going to shape their decisions, I think they, you know, it's just a great chance to move on. But I think, you know, it's reflective, you know, if you look at South Africa by itself, it's got challenging times ahead. You know, we need a few more hours to unpack that, but you know, the real economy is where we sat down on day one and said this is where we can make a change. And so the real economy being sort of goods and services used by the consumer. And so if we can even have sort of one inkling of utility which benefits the consumer in the medium to long term, then we're just delighted to be a part of it. In terms of what lies ahead is the consumer recognizing that they have the total agency over how they act in that real economy, that you don't need to pay ridiculously high interest rates just to be a part of that economy. And then to sort of balance the power of the consumer and put the control back in their hands as to how they meaningfully and sort of pragmatically engage with the consumer market.
I think, and then just finally from my side, the in terms of Payjus now going forward, we are going to continually attack and innovate in specific segments which we call time machine segments. And these are segments that, and we've started with the fashion and retail and the Payjus now, an interest-free product, basically. But we're going to continue to innovate into those time machine segments. And what we deem a time machine segment is a segment or an area where we are able to add significant value to a consumer. And through adding that significant value to the consumer, such as not paying interest, you effectively get more bang for your buck, more money to spend, and hopefully more time with your family.
So that's been it. We've been with Craig Newborn, who is the CEO of Payjus Now, together with Mark McCleary, who is the Chief Data and Analytics Officer at Payjus Now, just giving us some insight into the company and what they're trying to do. They are a buy now, pay later business model, and they were talking about how E-commerce has actually experienced a boom, and a product such as theirs have become an attractive alternative to credit for consumers who may have been hesitant about buying products online, but are now, you know, using it as a way to, you know, just test things out. And over time, it's also then helping to shape or to, you know, change some of the behavior. Lots of different factors to consider, but that has been the main thing. Also talking about the fact that they're seeing the growth in e-commerce, you know, rising, and by some estimates, there is a 20% rise on that end. Also just highlighting the fact that in countries such as Australia, a lot of commerce actually goes through some of these channels. Also talking about the fact that they are launching a in-store product. They're going to be having a Zappa-like QR code model that they're going to be using for some of those in-store transactions. Also just saying that there is a place in this omni-channel world, there is a place for bricks and mortar, that the mall is not as dead as some people would say. So that's been it. Thank you so much to Craig and to Mark for joining us for this show and just sharing their insights into what's going on in the consumer retail sector.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
A very fascinating discussion coming out with the team from Pages Now, and it also follows this trend. As I mentioned during the show, we've had other companies such as Payflex on the Business Tech Spotlight, and it's interesting to see how some of these fintech companies are growing and some of the spaces that they're occupying. Because on the one hand, you've got the working capital fintech companies such as Lulalend, Merchant Capital and Retail Capital that are coming in. And on that end, you've also got the companies that are offering early access to salaries. But now you've also got the companies that are doing the buy now, pay later business model on the fintech side. And fintech just offers some exciting prospects about where the digital economy is actually going, because in a lot of ways it mirrors a lot of what's going on in the real economy, coming up with some solutions that would otherwise not be available in the real economy. When you go into a store, for example, what type of assessment is a store owner going to be able to make to you within, you know, a few seconds? Because the assessment process that Pages Now, for example, is making is all happening within 10 seconds, looking at your social media, the type of card, you know, where do you live, your job, all of these data points. And if it's things that are going to be able to help consumers or ordinary people, then you sort of hope for their success, because these are some of the ways that are going to actually help to grow new areas of business. Because, for example, one of the points we kept talking about is how behavior change is being inspired by that ability to buy something, you know, actually receive it, because people have a lot of indignation and anxiety around e-commerce and interacting online, and actually getting over that behavioral change, those stumbling blocks. It helps having, you know, some of these solutions in mind. But going forward, yeah, we'll just see how the companies actually execute and actually being able to grow themselves, because this is, you know, perhaps only a starting point, and we'll be hoping that the industry actually, one, gets more players, but secondly, comes up with more solutions that will be able to help consumers and ordinary South Africans. Because the big thing, we've spoken about it quite a lot on the show, is that South Africa does have a culture of spenders versus savers, and that's led to a really big, you know, debt culture and high levels of indebtedness in the country. Because life can be tough, life can be real. There's a lot of things that do need to be financed. And if people are offering a zero interest product, and you just have to, you know, maybe adhere to some of the payment terms, then, you know, things like that might go some way in being able to address indebtedness in South Africa. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter. We're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller, together with Modiehi Mashemaete. I've been Mudiwa Gawaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning. Oh,